and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today we are joined by a very special guest. This man, after he retired, decided he would take up music and play in pubs and clubs, and he'd also decided he'd be a croquet champion. We're going to talk all about that. It's Dave Luxmore. How are you doing today, Dave?
Well, after an introduction like that, fantastic. Thank you, Goff.
Yeah. Well, that's the truth. So the first and obvious question, you've retired from your work, Dave. Why didn't you just shrivel up and die like everybody else?
Well, I had a slow passing out of the work phase. I sort of I went part-time as working as a project manager for a fella, and he gradually sold off his paddocks, and I ran out of work bit by bit. So with the spare time, I started doing some volunteering, and I've always done music. Like, it's always been there on the side right through my whole life, and bands and things. So I thought, would I go back trying to get another full-time job? And I thought, no, I'm over it with all the process and stuff that goes on with development these days. Anyway, so I thought, let's have a go at doing some more music. So I actually started doing some volunteer work and playing some old folks' homes and stuff. And then bit by bit, I've ended up playing in more old folks' homes, but they pay me some money. The old folks pay me money. Yeah. So I did a bit of that, and but then I, as you know, met up with Mick and started playing a bit more with him, as it turned out, and then it's just gone on from there.
So why choose the, because for folks who don't know, it's predominantly the fiddle and the mandolin of all sort of instruments. What drew you to those sorts of instruments?
Well, other blokes play the guitar. I mean, I can play guitar, and that's what I do when I do the old folks' homes solo, guitar and mouth organ. So the mando was something that I picked up way back in Melbourne days when I started to get into bush band sort of music, and just gravitated to that, and just gone on from there. So the mando's been around for quite a long time, and I've played quite a few instruments, banjos, I've tried accordions and hammer dulcimers, and I still play the whistle, tin whistle, and spoons and lagophones. I've done most of the crash and bash sort of instruments as well.
What is it about that sort of instrument and style that you enjoy? What draws you to that?
Well, my musical journey started with sort of folk music, I suppose, back in Adelaide a long time ago, and playing the guitar, started off with Peter, Paul and Mary, a bit of picking stuff and strumming, Bob Dylan, and that ended up in getting electric guitar and doing a bit of Creedence with a few of the lads. We formed a band, and that was good fun. But when I moved to Melbourne from Adelaide, I got in with a bunch of people that were right into bush music and Celtic music, actually, and used to go along and see some bands. And from there, we formed our own bush band, and the mandolin was one I was playing at the time, and I sort of picked up the tunes, and we did a few bush dances in those early years, and I learned a lot about the Aussie bush stuff, and we had some great times back then, and I've sort of done a fair bit of bush music up here on the Gold Coast over the years I've been up here as well.
And so you mentioned earlier Mick, who's a mutual friend of us. If people, Mick's been on the Beer Nuts Productions podcast, so if you scroll down the list of podcast interviews, you can listen to my chat with Mick, but he's a singer-songwriter and plays in a bunch of pubs and whatnot. Where did the partnership, how did all that come about with Mick?
Well, I was in a phase of playing in a bluegrass band, actually, and we supported a startup, acoustic music club on the Gold Coast, which is Coast Acoustics, which is still going quite strong, I'm glad to say. Not that I'm not involved with it anymore, but in the early days I was there, and we helped set up the PA, and it was for a lot of musos that play in their bedrooms and just lack the confidence to get out there and do it in the wild, except with the lacing of alcohol, perhaps they get it. But anyway, this was with, we set up PAs, and so they had three or four songs they could do. And there's a few of these folks that came along and really built confidence and went on from there, which is great. We used to get guest artists in, and Mick was one of the guest artists we got in, and So that's the first place I met him, and he sang his songs and did his thing, and then right at the end we sort of have a bit of a jam, and I got up on the mandolin, I was jamming along with Mick and some of his songs and some of the other songs that were being played. So we, yeah, struck it off as a good relationship right from the start. And after that, he was doing his own solo thing, and I sort of was in a bit of a changeover period from this bluegrass band. We sort of, yeah. So I thought, well, perhaps I'll give Mick a ring and see if he wants a sidekick for some any gigs turned up where we could do it to a bit too as a duo. And so happened that away we went, did a couple of gigs, one every now and again, every month or two. And then from there, the years have gone past, probably 12, 14 years or something. And the one or two months ended up every weekend. We play one or two or three gigs every weekend now, which is it's terrific. I'm really enjoying it. But for me, music's the passion. It always has been in the background. I've done other things to earn a dollar and keep the the life going. But music's been there. But I'm just so blessed, really, in a way, and thankful that I'm still playing music. And well, so not for a living, but I really don't need the money so much. But it's always nice to have a few spare just bob around, buy a few beers. And
absolutely, of course. And what is it about the Celtic music that sort of draws you in? That sort of style of music seems to be your go-to. What is it about that kind of music that really appeals to you?
It came originally from the bush music, which has got a lot of Celtic, English, Scottish and all sorts of different American tunes in there. A lot of it just comes from Celtic. That's the roots of a lot of terrific music. And so bush music and bush dances have a lot of tunes in them. So I learnt the tunes back in Melbourne days. And then when I came up here, I started a band called The Leaping Lizards with the fiddle player, actually. And the two of us got going with another couple of blokes, and we the bush music up here, we did years and years. I was in it for about 10 years, and I must have hundreds of bush dances. So that's playing a lot of tunes a lot of times. It started with the bush music, getting into it. And then, of course, when you get into the genre, you find out more intricate tunes and the history of some tunes. And I do have... some Celtic history, I'm happy to say.
Yes, I did. You're not
the red hair and terrible skin is a trademark of my Scottish grandfather, who brought it down and shared it. I have Scottish heritage, and I am really attracted to the Scottish fiddle tunes. It's a rich landscape of tunes, and it's fantastic. I really love the Scottish tunes, and of course. The Irish tunes are terrific as well, but probably the Scottish, I lean towards those more, but tend to play more Irish.
And so when you're playing at a pub and you see drunks like me jumping up and down and having a great time, does it make you feel young, does it sort of keep you going sort of thing? Like, is it what sort of spurs you on?
Seeing young fellas like you have a good time, yeah too right. That's one thing Mick and I probably align with, and it's important to me when I play music, if people have fun, I'm having fun. So it's just a thing Mick and I share, that we really like seeing people enjoy our music, and we work pretty hard at, giving people a good time, playing songs, looking at the audience, seeing whether they're getting a bit tired if they're dancing. So we put some slow ones in. You've got to read it as you go. So that's something I've always done in my musical career. Just watch the audience. If they're having fun, that's great. And take them with you on the ride.
And do you reckon it keeps you young? You reckon it keeps you going?
Too right. Look at me. I look like a 40-year-old. Well, even though I'm... Yeah, up there.
Well, people see the photo on the website, so they can make their own learned judgments there, Dave.
Yes. Well, the truth is, so I was born in 1953, a long time ago.
Well, did you ever think at this age you'd still be like, one in the morning you're playing music to a bunch of people like me at a pub? Yeah. Did you ever think like 30 years ago you'd still be doing this?
Well, if you asked me 30 years ago, definitely not. But I've always said along my life and musical career, I don't want to peak too early. So I thought of leaving it to late, sort of become famous, you know, in my later years.
Smart there, you know.
Yeah, it's all downhill once you hit the top, you know. That's what happens with these musos and all sorts of people.
So let's chat about croquet now, because you are also a bit of a croquet champion.
Well, yes. That was interesting. The story actually began a long time ago. My mother played croquet. My dad played bowls, and I played tennis and croquet. We're all in the same area in the same sporting complex back in Adelaide. The Coonalite Gardens, a classic suburb of Adelaide. And so I knew my mum played croquet, and I was a young fella, and I went over there now and again and hit some balls, and you hit them through hoops and all that. And so I got to know a bit about the game, but that was it. And I really didn't have much to do with it for about 50 years or more. And then, but I remembered the game, and then I brought my mum up from Adelaide, where she sort of slipped down the Alzheimer's sort of path, unfortunately. And when she passed away, and then I still had her croquet clubs, which I'd bought up from Adelaide with her. And she'd had a couple of games, but then, yeah, she couldn't remember what was going on the court. So it didn't last long. I was cleaning out the shed, and there were these croquet mallets. And I was about 60 at this stage. And so I thought, well, perhaps I'll have a go at this, because I had a bit of spare time. So I cold called the local croquet club. And they were more than happy. A young bloke, cool, beauty. So I went around and started hitting balls, and as it turns out, croquet has morphed into three different forms of croquet, which is golf croquet, which I call sort of the entry level. You start off there, and then there's a game called ricochet, which is a bit more skilled, and then the original game, and I think the main game, is called association croquet. Where you need a few more skills, and it takes a bit longer to get the strategy of the game. And that's the one that I play. And anyway, once I started, I sort of quickly moved through to the ricochet, and then started playing pennants, where sort of more competitive games from our club playing against other clubs on the coast. And did a year of ricochet, and then went to the association croquet. And then got into penance with that, and then I loved it. And it's what my mum used to play. And she actually was in the state team in South Australia. I knew all about that. I knew she was a good player, but I didn't. Yeah, that was about it. And anyway, bit by bit, I sort of got into this game. And I thought, whoa, there's so much strategy. This is fun. This is good. And I guess I enjoyed the challenge different strokes you got to play, and you got to get a skill level up, and then apply the strategy, and then you get better and better the more you play.
Is it a thinking man's game? Is it, Dave?
Well, they say it's like chess on grass and a bit of snooker on grass, because it's, you know, you've got to use angles a lot, and you're hitting balls to get to particular places on the lawn and all that. So there's a lot more to it than you might think, you know. And I think when people do get into the game, that's what they find. Oh, this is a great game. I wish I started this when I was a lot younger. And as it happens, you know, like lawn bowls, the guns around the world, the top players are young fellas. In fact, Australia's got the number one in the world, a bloke called Robert Fletcher. And he lives down in Victoria, and he's still number one. He's an amazing player, just so cool and precise. I've played against him.
Did you crush him? Crush him like an ant?
No. No, he's brilliant. Like in one game, I had two hits. It's a game that you've got to make a roquet and then take croquet, and then you've got to get through sort of 12 hoops and then hit a stick in the middle. And that's with two sets with two balls. So, he did that quite successfully. I only hit my two balls in. So it shows his skill level is pretty amazing. But anyway, my skill level sort of got up bit by bit, and then I entered competitions in Brisbane and then interstate as well. And I had a big year. 2018 was my big year. And I went from about number 250 in the world. I made a goal, actually. I set a goal. There's nothing like setting a goal, is there? At the start of 2018, I thought, right, by the end of 2019, I'm going to be at least number 100 in the world. Anyway, by the end of 2018, I was number 87. So once I said, I seemed to win everything I went in 2018. It was an amazing year. Anyway, I just loved it. And yeah, when you're on the rise, you've got nothing to lose and everything to gain, and so you go for it. And yeah, so I've had a great, interesting path with the croquet. But I've sort of, once you reach the top of number one in Queensland, you kind of got an X on your back, and then everyone's after you. They want to beat you. And so,
that damn Dave Luxmore.
Oh, I got to get him. Yeah, and of course, not every day you play to the best of your ability, and it's an interesting game because, if someone's playing very well and you're not, they can beat you. It's the way it goes. It's a game of consistency, really. So I guess I was a bit more consistent than most of the blokes and ladies in Queensland.
Is it a mixed sport? Is it, you play against women as well as
men? Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a gender specific sport.
No, but there are competitions where it's just men's only and women's only. There's mixed, and then there's doubles and all sorts of different variations.
And so you have actually won a few titles though.
Yeah, Queensland's won a few. Yeah, there's different competitions, different trophies you can go for, which sort of attracts Queensland players, and then there's some that people come from interstate as well. To the Queensland Open is open to everyone. I think I won that once or twice, but and I've gone down to Melbourne, played in the Victorian, a competition down there's called the President's Eights, and they get the top players, they all enter it, and then they break you into groups of eight. Well, I managed to be ranked and seeded as number one in the second eights, and a lot of pressure, you know, you got to beat all the other blokes, and it's an intense competition. You play 3 to 4 games a day, and games can last two and a half hours sort of thing. So it's a lot of croquet, and it's about 4 days solid of it. And anyway, I managed to win that. I was very happy with that.
Good for you, was Dave.
In 2018. My good year. So yeah.
Do you have any superstitions, you know, like, no sex before the night before a competition or anything like that, Dave?
You've got to wear odd socks, and I've always changed my... No, I haven't. No, it's all like a lot of sports, and as you get up in sort of not elite sports, but up towards the top of the sport, it's all to do with your head and how calm you are, and just controlling the little voice that runs away, the monkey voice that goes rattle, rattle. And if you think any negative thought, isn't it amazing? Just think, I better get this rogue. If I miss this, as soon as you think that, it's hard work to get out of it. You will miss it, even if it's a short rugby. It's an amazing thing, and that's one of the challenges I've found. So I reached the top, and then I've sort of peaked and gone down a bit, and it's because of my head. And yes, it's an ongoing challenge.
Does the music help at all? Like, by that I mean, like, when you're playing, you know, to sort of calm your nerves and to calm yourself out, do you sort of run a sort of a music sort of soundtrack in your head to sort of calm the nerves and get yourself into a zone? Or am I like, what, is that just not something you've ever done?
It does help if you can get into that zone. It's amazing when you do relax and the game can just flow, and it's almost easy. But when you overthink things, and one way to get out of the overthinking is to hum a tune, or I remember there was a period there I was trying to learn some new tunes to sing with Mick on some late Friday and Saturday nights, and one of them was Red Wine. So, and I had that going in my head one day when I was playing. I was very relaxed.
You thought about drinking them as well.
Yeah, I do love a red wine. But just that song kept going, just coming, just that little riff kept coming into the head. Yeah, and I just hit the ball. You do have to concentrate when you actually strike and play the strokes. But in between, you got to just keep nice and cool.
Now, I did send Mick a text message, and I said to Mick, I've got Dave Luxmore coming into the studio. Can we stitch him up? Is there anything, does he have any weird habits when you play with him, or anything you can tell me that I can, you know, really, you know, get stuck into? And he replied, he said, no, Dave's a pretty good bloke and a pretty relaxed guy, and he wouldn't give me anything. He gave me absolutely donuts. So let's try and stitch up Mick. Is there anything about Mick you want to...
My God, is this? Where shall I start? Well, I've met his mother.
Okay.
Now, you think Mick can talk pretty well,
yes.
But his mother is he bought, he got her skill. So Mick talks quite a bit, even when if he's done a good job on me, how could I say anything bad about him? No, he's a great bloke. Anything bad about him? No, I don't. You put me on the spot here.
It's all right. We'll just he was very gracious and he didn't stitch you up. So I suppose the likewise can be the same. So
So we're both nice blokes.
apparently,
yeah.
So if people, I don't know, because I've never actually asked you this before, Dave. If you're if people want to learn more about Dave Luxmore, are you on social media or anything like that? You want to give yourself a shout out or plug anything, or is there anything you want to give a plug to?
Well, no. I'm an old fella, so I'm not hunting, selling anything or promoting anything.
No, I just thought I'd give you the option, you know.
So. Yeah. But I do have there's a Facebook page, but I very seldom put anything on it. You won't find much about me in there. There's a picture of me standing with a guitar beside me, I think. I think it was something like that. So long ago.
Dave Luxmore, the ultimate recluse.
Well, yeah. You've kind of got to be aware of it and use it a little bit, but I use it in very, very small amounts.
Fair enough. Fair enough indeed. So well, if you do actually stumble along to an Irish bar and you see Dave Luxmore playing, make sure you stop in and say g'day and have a pint and listen to the tunes, because I can always guarantee, because I've seen Dave and Mick play many, many times, and I love what they do, and he is correct. They always get the crowd up and going, and it's always a good listen. So if you do see them advertise the gathering, is the name of the band situation. So if you see the Gathering Irish Kick-Ass Band advertised, make sure you do go check them out, because you will have a fun evening. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, I think it's on the money there. Yep. No, we're guaranteed to get people having fun. And you come and ask us, and if it's a song we don't know, we won't do it. It's that easy. But if it's something we half know, we'll have a go.
We'll have a crack.
Yes, we do tend to wing it a bit, which is one of the beauties. I love playing music. We play live, like there's nothing recorded, and that makes it very sort of intimate in a way, so we can slow things down, speed it up, stop in the middle of it, get people to sing along, clap along. It's much more on the edge, especially when people like you are dancing about 2 foot in front of us.
Yes, there's nothing quite like a drunk blind person jumping up and down to give you the heebie-jeebies, I would have thought.
But at least I have noted your style. Goff, and it tends to be vertical. So I love that. And I've got a brother-in-law that dances like that. He jumps up at the air, just heads off into the air. Ooh, he gets the Joe DeVille, and up he goes. And that's, you dance sort of like that.
Well, you know, I don't know what's around me, so up is the safest option, really, Dave, to be fair.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Well, that does bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Thank you so much for coming in, Dave.
It's been my pleasure, Goff.
Oh, crikey. And make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a friendly comment, rate and review. 5 stars is always good. And, of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. Oh, I should also point out, Dave Luxmore has been in the Beer Nuts Productions film, haven't you, Dave?
Oh, too right. That was one of my highlights.
Yeah, so
yes, I was playing a bit of fiddle in a wedding scene.
If you jump on the website and you download the wedding film, A Guide to a Perfect Wedding, Dave does a wonderful job, actually, in that film. He's got a little cameo where he's playing the fiddle and I insult him, and it's a very humorous scene. So you can check it out there at beernutsproductions.com. So until next time, we will talk to you then.